In Benghazi, Americans lost their lives. Congress questioned Hillary Clinton. Remember her arrogant response? What difference does it make? Well, stay tuned to today's Stand in the Gap weekend as we address this question and this dangerous attitude.
Welcome to Stand in the Gap weekend, the American Pastors Network Week in Review, featuring the best segments taken from our Stand in the Gap Today daily program. Our goal is to equip the pastor, church leader, and all believers to think critically and biblically in a culture that increasingly rejects truth. Stand by to hear a focused analysis of current events viewed through the lens of a biblical and constitutional worldview. The pastor's and the believer's goal should be to impact our culture for Christ. As part of our mission to urge pastors to boldly preach the whole counsel of God and equip people to be soldiers and ambassadors for Christ, we're establishing APN chapters in all 50 states. Learn more on the web at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. Now, here's our host and American Pastors Network President, Sam Rohr.
Hello and welcome to Stand in the Gap weekend. Today's program will again feature a small selection from the previous week's most important Stand in the Gap Today programs. On this program, you'll hear leading issues of greatest importance to the Christian and American patriot analyzed from a biblical and constitutional perspective and answering the toughest and most pertinent questions. We know that the purpose of the pulpit is all about the gospel message, but we also know that it's not limited to the gospel message and the winning of the lost, but also includes the command to equip the believer to be articulate ambassadors for Christ in an increasingly evil and godless culture. As preachers, we believe that making disciples is what the Great Commission is all about. In Isaiah chapter 59, the list of Israel's sins are enumerated and judgment pronounced. The description of the moral and political landscape are described in detail. In verse 14, it says, "Judgment is turned away backward, and justice standeth afar off, for truth is fallen in the street, and equity cannot enter." Isaiah goes on to say that the people were going about in mourning like those living in darkness, searching for the light. Does this sound like present-day America to you? Has the way of truth been perverted? Can our nation be brought back to the light? We believe that the answer to both of these questions is yes, but we must do it God's way. So let's begin by setting the stage with a look at the most recent example of how judgment has been turned backwards and who or what is behind this perverting of truth. On June the 5th, Americans were outraged at the statements by FBI Director James Comey in rendering the final verdict of not guilty on the breach of security by Hillary Clinton during her term as Secretary of State. During our daily radio program, we interviewed IQ Arasuli, author of Unveiling Islam, an expert on Islam, to discuss who stands to gain the most by this travesty of justice. During the next two segments, you'll hear him answer a variety of questions on this topic as we delve into the reasoning behind this decision by the FBI and what might happen as a result.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to bring right in now on our program today our guest, IQ Arasuli. He is the author of Unveiling Islam, a world-renowned expert on world religions, specifically Islam, but also a very astute geopolitical observer as well. And IQ, welcome to Stand in the Gap today.
Thank you for having me.
IQ, today you've been listening to our first introduction, our first segment here. We are bearing down on this issue of Hillary Clinton and the FBI's Comey effectively giving her a out of jail free pass. But I'd like to bring you in from just a slightly different observation point. Let's go up about 10,000 foot, and if we could, and look down on this from afar. Let me start with this question for you. While anyone, I'm going to put it this way, anyone not intoxicated with arrogance and corruption realizes that there was an abortion of justice in Comey's announcement about Hillary yesterday, my first question to you is this: which of Hillary's co-conspirators would stand to gain most by a Hillary presidency? And I'm going to name these three because we've named these three before on this program. And I'm going to lay them out there and I'm going to let you go wherever you want to go with them. But the first one is the Muslim Brotherhood in Islam. They are a strong co-conspirator and a supporter of Hillary Clinton. Do they gain if she becomes president? How about the globalists? They really like her as well, and they're strong supporters, and about the political establishment. They're all about Hillary. Which of those would stand to gain most if she became president? Put them together for us, IQ.
Well, I put them together. I agree with all three of them, but you forgot something else.
There you go.
Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia. All of them are in cahoots with her. Look, as one who loves America, I'm outraged that the FBI has somehow, against all facts, not found any reason to take Hillary to court. But as you were mentioning it earlier, God is my witness, I have exactly the same conclusion. I qualify my anger with the following sentence, which I believe the FBI director, James Comey, stated on purpose, that this was the same sentence that Hillary qualified her illegal actions in trying to defend herself when caught. At the time, you mentioned Amen. That it is so important. This is the most important sentence in his speech. At the time, she said also at the time, but he found her guilty. Are you with me?
I think that's a pretty good observation, IQ. And, you know, I think that not only was he drawing a comparison, but I think that he was presenting before the American people the whole concept that this lady needs an indictment. She is a liar. She is a crook. And he was making it very, very clear what he thought about it. And I tell you what, the more I think of it, the more I appreciate that.
But it's true. I sincerely hope that millions of Americans are so enraged and disillusioned at this egregious miscarriage of justice, or it looks like it, miscarriage of justice. But I honestly believe he did it on purpose.
IQ, let me follow up very, very quickly. I apologize for interrupting, but I think you've made a very astute observation. Gentlemen, and I want to address this to IQ, and then maybe Sam, Gary, you can come in as well. But there's one thing that has not yet been addressed by James Comey or anybody at this point, and that is what's going to happen with the Clinton Foundation, because, see, there's still an investigation of the entire Clinton Foundation. IQ, do you believe that James Comey did not recommend an indictment against Hillary because there is going to be some type of a prosecution relative to the Clinton Foundation per se?
That's possible, but I honestly believe he did it on purpose, because it is very difficult to put a woman like her on trial, and then what will happen? Democrats will say it's the GOP who is doing it. That's illegal. What he did, I honestly believe, was the best. But he put it to the judgment of Americans. And I sincerely hope that millions of Americans are so enraged that they will go to Donald Trump, who is scaring the same elite that the whore of Babylon, I call her the whore of Babylon, Hillary Rodham Clinton belongs to.
That's biblical.
Mm. Wow.
Yes,
wow.
It is biblical.
It is. IQ, yes. Let me go one step further. Let me go one step further on that. Hillary has very close Islamic friends. I laid it out at the beginning. Brotherhood, Islam, globalist, establishment. You said you really couldn't separate them because they're all in league together. And that's basically what we believe as well. But let's go to the Islamic thread here with Hillary. The Saudis were involved in the foundation. There appears to be some connections between what Hillary did in Libya and personal gain coming out of oil coming out of Libya. Certainly her closest compatriot is a Muslim Brotherhood, Huma Abedin. They're all directly tied, and they're all directly tied to Obama as well, Barack Hussein. So let me ask you, is there a clear Islamic thread that goes through the heart of Hillary Clinton? And is perhaps, I'm going to be bold here, is she perhaps a closet jihadist?
Well, I wouldn't call her a closet jihadist, but she's definitely not a patriot of America. Definitely not. Look, six of the top people in the intelligence services in America are Muslims. You have two senators who are Muslims, or two congressmen, and they swore on the Quran. Ladies and gentlemen, let me explain to you in plain English. Anybody who swears on the Quran cannot ever be loyal to the American Constitution. Full stop. If there is anybody who can argue with me, debate me, and win, I will pay them $200,000. What more do you want?
Well, that's a pretty clear statement, IQ, and I kind of think that you love America probably a whole lot better, or a whole lot more, I should say, than Hillary. I suggest that you run as the president for the presidency of the United States of America. You would probably do better than both.
I would love to be at least an advisor. I would love to be an advisor to Donald Trump. I promise you, I will make him succeed. I promise you I'll make him succeed.
Well, I believe
I
that you would.
Like and... a boost. It isn't a boost. I know the mentality of the enemy. I know Islam. Mm. I am the psychological profiler of Muhammad.
Yes.
That's what it is.
And I believe that you could give good insight to him. And, you know, maybe that's something that we can pray for, that the Lord might open that door for you. Sam, I have a question for you, though. And, you know, being that you've been involved with government for so many, many years, we really do not know what took place behind the doors of that FBI meeting with Hillary on Saturday. Do you think that there's a possibility, in light of what Jim Comey said yesterday in those first 13 or 15 minutes of his presentation, do you think that there's a possibility that he gave her a sort of a come-to-Jesus moment behind closed doors the other day before he let her go?
Well, Gary, that would be speculation. I do not know, but I do think it is interesting that that meeting was held for 3.5 hours, that the meeting, that the plan for Hillary and for Obama was to be in North Carolina on Air Force One the day of the announcement yesterday, and that these things were planned. I don't think, Gary, that Obama and Hillary would have been scheduled to be in North Carolina had she come down with an indictment. Somehow, some way, I don't believe that Comey's comments were, in fact, a surprise from the standpoint of not indicting her, although it may have been a real surprise that he did kind of indict her in the first 15 minutes.
Sam, can I jump in and say this? If you look at the timeline of everything that's taken place, and I think the point you just made about them being in my state of North Carolina yesterday was anything but coincidental. They would not have planned that trip if they had any idea that an indictment was going to come down, a formal indictment. But gentlemen, for months, she has stood in front of the media and guaranteed, all but guaranteed, she would not be prosecuted. She has said it repeatedly. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to this. Back in April, the president used this language, and I'm quoting, she didn't do anything deliberately, but she was very careless. By the way, those were almost the identical words that James Comey used yesterday. She didn't do anything deliberately. Mm-hmm. We haven't found anything deliberate. Well, intent and motive is not the thing that's being questioned here with this type of situation. It's not what did you intend to do, it's what did you do. Then Loretta Lynch meets with Bill Clinton for about a half hour on her airplane. Did he meet with her? Did she meet with him? Was she assuring him, hey, she's not going to be indicted, you have nothing to worry about? Was Bill Clinton strong-arming the Attorney General? We don't know. And then Loretta Lynch comes out after that meeting on the airplane is revealed, and she says this, I am fully prepared to follow the FBI's recommendation. Mm-hmm. Did she already know what the FBI's recommendation was going to be, which was no indictment? Then Hillary meets for about 3.5 hours on Saturday, a weekend, which none of us, if we had to meet with the FBI, would be shown that kind of deference. So, gentlemen, my point is this. There is collusion at the highest point in this entire thing. What Donald Trump said yesterday, it's rigged, is exactly correct.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, even if nothing was said amongst them, they work close enough together. They understand each other. They can read each other, David. And you know, I think that this is the natural conclusion that they came to. Even if nothing was said, they can read each other, and I think that they knew what the outcome would be. You know, when you talk about any kind of a criminal act taking place here, I believe there was a criminal act. But what's even worse is it was a matter of judgment. Do you want a person like Hillary Clinton in the White House with the fallacy of judgment that she has? And yet, yesterday, down in your state, Dave, Barack Obama said she is the most qualified person, man or woman, to be in the White House. How sick could you get it?
That's right. Well, Dave and Gary and both of them said, they said this. Obama said, I've got your back.
In this next segment, our interview with IQ Avrasuli continues as we deal with the very real question of why have Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton committed to having each other's back? What is their common cause? You'll learn why when our Iraqi-born guest makes it very clear when he said, wake up, America. Wake up. Because if you don't, you're finished. You're finished. I'm telling you, you are finished. Listen now.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to go right immediately to IQ and repose the question that I mentioned before this last break. And that is this. Barack Hussein, and I'm saying that intentionally, Barack Hussein said, "I have your back, Hillary." And Hillary says she has Barack Hussein's back. We really get a twofer. You get her, you get him. They're linked. They're joined at the hip. They joined themselves pretty firmly there, and they actually take Air Force One at the taxpayer's expense to go down and do campaigning, which is a really big problem in and of itself on a different matter. But looking from the outside, IQ, how do you view these two walking lockstep? What are their, from your perspective, their most common cause to which they are pursuing? And why would they want to really be so careful to cover each other's back?
Because they have been destroying America together. Another four years of Hillary Clinton is the continuation of 4 years of Obama. What has Obama done? Destroyed America. You are a laughing stock, the Americans, if you are listening to me. You are a laughing stock all over the world. How do I know? I get all the emails. You don't. The news media don't tell you anything. I do. I get it. Nobody respects America. I mean, nobody. Even ISIS is making a mockery. What's his name? Obama said the JV team, they control an area bigger than the United Kingdom. They're controlling now in North Africa, a gigantic part of North Africa. All under Hillary Clinton and Obama. Wake up. The only reason I say support Donald Trump, not because he's the most perfect man, not because he's the most decent man, but he's the most patriotic man at the moment. You have nobody. In the GOP, who are? All of them are against him. He's actually fighting two political entities, the Democratic Party and the Republicans.
So let me go there.
So IQ,
let me go right there. You raised it. You answered that question very, very well. Why would each of them, both of them, Barack Hussein and Hillary Clinton, why would they have each other's back? I asked you that question, the common cause, and you said they both are out to destroy America. Wow.
There's no question.
Now,
I'm an outsider. I'm looking in. Why would they say that? Because that's exactly what Obama has done. What has he done? Can anybody give me one single achievement that he or Hillary Clinton were able to achieve in the last 8 years?
Well, he's brought shame to America, IQ. He has brought shame to America. He's not done anything positive for this nation, as far as I'm concerned. But Sam and Dave and IQ, let me throw this case scenario out to you. You know, Obama yesterday said that Hillary is the most qualified person to sit in the White House. Now, we know that Obama wants to become the Secretary General of the United Nations. Mm-hmm. Imagine him in that position and her in the White House. What would that do to our nation in the world?
That's a great question. IQ?
Well, as I said, self-destruction. Ladies and gentlemen, wake up. It is we, the people. It is we, the people, who have so far been the voice for Donald Trump. We need more. America needs more people, not only from the GOP, not only from the white people, but from all the status of America to support Trump. Why? Because he has a vision of America. Hillary doesn't have a vision. Obama never had a vision. At least the vision that he had was to make a diminutive America, not exceptional. He and she, they failed with Putin. They failed with Russia. They failed with Germany. They failed with China. They failed with Iran. They failed with everything. What does Putin? What did Trump say only a few hours ago? He supported and thought of Saddam Hussein as a great leader. He's right. I am Iraqi. I was born in Iraq. I lived under Saddam Hussein. We never had an act of terror, ever.
Wow. He said that in reference to fighting terrorism, IQ. I don't want people
Absolutely.
To get the wrong idea
he
here.
He never had a terrorist act. Gaddafi never had a terrorist act. Never.
He was basically saying Saddam Hussein knew how to fight terrorism. That's what he was really saying. He wasn't supporting other things that he did.
Because he himself is a terrorist. So
and IQ,
only a terrorist can control a terrorist.
And IQ, what
you're
we're
right.
saying here, what you're saying is, I think we need to build that out just a little bit here. You are not saying Saddam Hussein was a white knight, a great guy. Neither was Gaddafi a great guy. But what you are saying is that when they were in control, they sat on top of the Islamic terrorist, and they did not. And he did not permit terrorism to occur. You're not saying that he was a perfect guy. He killed people in Iraq, didn't he? Or was that a lie?
Correct, but what has it got to do with Americans? He killed the Iraqis.
Right.
What's it got to do with you guys? This
okay.
is Islam. You've got to understand that no Muslim nation can live as a democratic state. It is impossible. They can only be controlled by terror. Muhammad said, Allah made me victorious with terror. Only with terror. Look at them. In my country, Iraq, in Ramadan, 2 days ago, over 160 people were blown to pieces. In Ramadan, it's supposed to be a holy month. Holy my foot.
Sam, let me jump in and say something. I hope our listening audience is hearing and hearing clearly what IQ is saying. Here he is, not a citizen of the United States. He's an outsider, but he's looking from the outside in. As an evangelist who goes into churches all over America, I'm an outsider. I'm not a member of these churches that I'm honored and privileged to speak in. So sometimes an outsider coming in can provide a perspective that those that live in the midst of something no longer see. And that's one of the benefits of bringing in an evangelist to your church. He can view things a little more objectively. What IQ is saying is coming from a thoroughly objective viewpoint. And Americans, listen to what he's saying. He's not praising the character necessarily of Muammar Gaddafi or Saddam Hussein. He's saying that those men did not allow terror acts to take place while they were in charge. And so from that standpoint, America was safer. Our relationship with those guys was better than what we have now, and now we have got people in positions of power that are complicit with terrorism. So IQ, what you're saying is incredibly astute.
And fellas, IQ, you know, when you watch that, you can see that ever since those guys have been out of the picture, Gaddafi and Saddam Hussein, elements of terrorism have grown all across this, around this world. ISIS has grown all around this world. So really what Barack Obama has done has led into defeat for America, not to strengthen America.
Gary, I think those secular leaders, Gary, were removed, and into the void that was created by their absence came this rabid Islamic Brotherhood movement, the Ayatollahs, which have been a disaster. And our current administration, Hillary Clinton included, have been complicit with that group.
Mm-hmm. And Gary and Dave and IQ, I want to go back to you on this, because these points right here, I think, are extraordinarily important to bear in mind. I ask you this first question. What do they have in common, Barack Hussein and Hillary? Why do they have each other's backs covered? What were they doing? And you went and you brought in the fact that of knocking out some of those leaders. IQ, in reality, under this Barack Hussein administration, of which Hillary Clinton was at the State Department, have not the State Department actually been the mechanism through which major change has been made in the Middle East, taking out a Gaddafi, trying to upset Mubarak in Egypt, and they did, and then trying to take what's happening in Syria? All of these things gave rise to the Arab Spring. These are all evidences. Connect these, please, as a matter of common policy that these two have enacted, that perhaps they are afraid of this coming to light in the case of a full hearing. Comment on that, please.
You're right. You're absolutely right. They have destabilized the whole of the Middle East and North Africa, completely destabilized. And they are trying to pick a fight with Putin. Putin is a chess player. Obama is a golf player. It's not a contest. The chess player will obliterate the golf player, because the golf player doesn't need to have too much brains.
I tell you what, he's not a very good bowler either, IQ.
But IQ, what you said seems funny, but it's true.
It's
serious, because we're playing with the lives of millions and millions of people in these United States and around the world. IQ, we've only got about a minute or so left in this segment, but I want you to kind of bring this again. We started with a 10,000-foot level. You've given us a great view from the outside of how to bring some of these pieces together. How do you believe this is going to go forward here now in America? Do you believe, watching from the outside, that the American people will be awakened because of what's happening?
God willing, yes. Because if the American people do not wake up with all this garbage coming at them, with all these egregious miscarriages of justice, you are finished. I'm telling you, you are finished. You're dead. America will be finished. You have to vote this time, and you have to vote all the Democrats out and the Republicans out, all of them. They're all corrupt. Only Donald Trump is standing up. Why? Because he's the outsider. As bad as he may be, he's not perfect. Nobody is perfect. God is perfect. Let's get this straight. Vote for Donald Trump and save America.
Hello, I'm Sam Rohr of the American Pastors Network with an important Stand in the Gap Minute. Jeremiah, the weeping prophet, was called to an uphill heavenly mission. His job? Rebuke the people for their sins, identify their idolatry, remind them of the anger of God toward their sinful lives, and call them to repentance. But he said, "When I rebuked the people, they ridiculed God and made fun of me. So I decided I won't talk of God any longer. But I couldn't stand being quiet because God's word became a burning fire shut up in my bones, and I spoke more boldly of the Lord because he was with me. When I look at America, I also weep because of the hardness of hearts. Like Jeremiah, because our heavenly mission is an uphill one, we cannot retreat but become more bold because our job is faithfulness. The results are up to God." The American Pastors Network, pastors preaching the truth, equipping people to impact the culture for Christ. Visit us at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net to find out how you can help. As you can see in our discussion with IQ Arasuli, there's a lot to consider when we begin to look at all of the pieces of the puzzle. One thing remains clear. If truth and justice continue to be trampled upon, the fate of our nation will be like that of the nation of Israel. In this next segment, we'll consider some final questions regarding Hillary Clinton's terse question, "What difference does it make?" So in practical terms, what difference does it make if the truth is ignored? What difference does it make who becomes the next president? And what difference does it make to God's people and the pulpits of America?
What difference at this point does it make? What difference at this point does it make?
We weren't told they wanted more security again. We did not know they wanted more security again.
What difference? What difference? What difference does it make?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Stand in the Gap today. You heard it in her own words. What difference does it make? And we think that that's an appropriate question to ask now that Hillary has gotten a get-out-of-jail-free pass. What difference does it make to America? What difference does it make to America and our justice system if nothing is done? What difference does it make if the American public remains quiet and silent on this issue? What difference does it make if Congress does nothing to stand up and address this matter of injustice? And we're going to conclude this program with saying, what difference does it make? Hillary said that in response to the fact that there were individuals who were killed in Benghazi. What difference does it make now? Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here to tell you it makes a whole lot of difference. Dave, I want to go to you first on that part of the first question here and say, if nothing is done to rectify official justice, what difference does it make to our nation?
Well, Sam, if something is not done to correct this incredible injustice that has been the Hillary Clinton State Department tenure, then to be honest with you, I'm going to say what IQ said. We're toast. We're done. We're done as a nation. If truth falls that far that someone can do the things that Hillary did, Benghazi aside, Benghazi out of the picture, which is a whole nother situation that Hillary has been right in the middle of and has just done atrocious, atrocious anti-American things Let's just look at the email scandal. If this thing is not corrected and if she doesn't face the music for this, we are done as a nation.
Dave, Gary, I'm going to go to you next on that. What difference does it make to our freedom, to our standing in America, to in the world? What difference does it make to Christianity in America if a Hillary were to become the president of these United States?
Oh, my. What difference does it make to Christianity? You know, and I can't remember the exact words that she used, and this goes back a number of years, and probably we ought to Google it and to clarify it even a little bit more. But at one particular point in time, Hillary Clinton made the statement that we've got enough Christianity, we've got enough Bible in America today. You know, let that be a warning to us. And then compare that to what Donald Trump said, Sam, you and I heard him say it, that what we need today for our young people is to see that our young people get more involved in Sunday school. We heard him say that in person 2 weeks ago, yesterday. And in addition to that, he also emphasized that if he becomes the president of the United States, that he is going to stand up for the freedoms that Christians have, that we can speak what we want to speak, we can say what we want to say without the fear of molestation. That makes a great big difference. If Hillary becomes the president of the United States, I think that we can, just say goodbye to the freedoms that we have in the United States of America for Christianity. I see that so clearly.
Those are pretty declarative statements that you and Dave and IQ have made. I made a reference, and I don't want to leave it hanging out there just like it is, that in effect James Comey gave Hillary a get-out-of-jail-free card. That may not be an forever get-out-of-jail-free card. It may be a temporary pass. And I would hope that it would be, in fact, a pass. Because if, in fact, as we said at the beginning of the program, this judgment of whether or not it was a worthy call or an unjust call by James Comey and giving her this at least a temporary pass, it's put it into the court of public opinion.
Mm-hmm.
That's the people of the United States. We say it often, the power's in the people. Well, the people are going to have an opportunity to weigh in beginning now. Dave, if the American people on one level or another, and I would like to kind of lay out some of the things that we know are happening that may be in the front of the news right now, of evidences of things are happening. People are beginning to move in this regard. But what happens, or what does it say? Let's put it this way. What does it say about the voter or the American people, if at this point seeing this kind of thing, which is not a freestanding episode, but is a culmination of many things that have been boiling like a boiling pot, if nothing is done now, what does it say about the American people?
Well, it says a lot about our apathy, but Sam, I think you may be onto something. And if I could just quote Japanese Admiral Isoroku Yamamoto in 1941 after the Pearl Harbor attack, he said this, and I'm quoting, "All I fear that we have done is awaken a sleeping giant and filled him with terrible resolve." And that's exactly what happened in 1941. Perhaps this situation that came to a head yesterday with James Comey's comments about Hillary Clinton, maybe this is the linchpin, gentlemen. Maybe this is going to create incredible resolve within the American people to make sure that she never serves anywhere in any other office, certainly not the presidency of the United States, and to provide some support for what I'm saying. And Sam, I think what you're saying, and Gary, I think you would agree, I've been hearing since yesterday's press conference incredible statements. I spent the day with a gentleman who is a former Marine Corps sergeant. He is also now involved in South Florida law enforcement. He is a patriotic American. He said right out of the get-go, he said, "Dave, I had a top secret clearance because of some of my military activity. If I had done what Hillary Clinton did with my emails," he said, "I'd be serving time in Leavenworth." It was a federal felony offense, what she did. He said, I'm hearing from people that are my buddies in the military. They're angry. Gary, you got a call even during yesterday's program while we were on the air from someone in the military, and their comment was this: those that they're hearing from, they're angry. I've heard from business people. I'm hearing from politicians that are angry. So perhaps, gentlemen, perhaps what James Comey did has indeed awakened a sleeping giant. Sam, if it doesn't, if it does not awaken us here, then indeed, as we're saying, we're done. We're toast. If we can't get upset about this, what will we get upset about? What will we respond to? What will we push back against?
Dave, I think that's a tremendous challenge. Now, we do know a couple of things are happening here, because I want to close with just a couple of examples here. Number one, we do know that Rasmussen polls and others are saying that the majority, 56% of the American people, say they disagree vehemently with James Comey's decision. Only 37% say it's in favor. That's a good thing. Comey is being requested to go before Congress tomorrow. Paul Ryan's got himself involved. Others are involved on that. And actually, there's a group, Veterans for America, that are going to be doing a bus tour starting very quickly from San Diego, going across America, demonstrating, trying to pull out all the information and the truth about Hillary. Gary, just on the last note, if people arise, that's a one good thing, but we cannot win this battle without the Lord. Put together the importance of having this done properly by God's people, erupting properly, not just out of anger.
Well, yes, I think we need to pray. We need to seek God's wisdom. James 1:5 tells us that if we lack wisdom, he will give it. And I certainly believe that if we pray and ask God for wisdom to deal with this from the biblical perspective, that he will give us the strength and the insight to do it. You know, I can't help but think, but years ago there was a book written entitled, Where is the Outrage? Why isn't American citizens, why aren't American citizens outraged today? I kind of think that what we see taking place today may bring that outrage from a biblical perspective back into the hearts and the minds and the thoughts of American people. And if we take that outrage that is growing within us as Christian patriots and seek God's wisdom and direction on how to deal with this from a biblical perspective, I fully believe, Sam and Dave, that God will give us the wisdom to do that. All we need to do is to pray for the boldness to do it and to do it effectively and properly.
I'm Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network. If you're a parent or grandparent and want to help bring spiritual renewal to America, here's where you should start, with your children and grandchildren. Our children need a godly education, one that mirrors the Christian values embraced by our founders and taught in the home by many of you. BJU Press, the Christian homeschool curriculum leader, makes homeschooling fun and exciting. Exceeding all national standards, BJU Press textbooks are accurate, dependable, and well-researched. They're designed to promote excellence for every child and are adaptable to different learning styles and challenges. Carefully integrating a true biblical worldview throughout BJU Press textbooks set the standard for academic instruction. That's why I so strongly endorse BJU Press textbooks and encourage their use by homeschoolers and Christian schools alike. If you're a parent and want to find out more, visit BJU Press online at bjupresshomeschool.com or by calling 800-845-5731. That's bjupresshomeschool.com.
You've been listening to Stand in the Gap Weekend, the Week in Review program from the American Pastors Network. We've been discussing the question, what difference does it make in regards to the Hillary Clinton email case? But now we're going to turn the corner and ask the question, what difference does it make when it comes to the pastors and the church leaders of America? George Barna, executive director of the American Culture and Faith Institute, joined our daily program on June the 7th to give us the latest research on the projected involvement of pastors in the 2016 elections. Some pastors and church leaders might be asking that question again. What difference does it make if the church gets involved? Well, perhaps you're asking that question personally. What difference does it make if I'm not involved in the political process? Let's listen in as George brings some real clarity to these confusing times.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Sam Rohr, David Kistler, and Gary Dahl, and our special guest today, George Barna, who was with us on the results or the survey information that they release every week, just released yesterday. We're dealing with that, and the title of this is basically Conservative Pastors Are Distancing Themselves from the 2016 Election. That's not a really good thing. George, I want to come back to you. Right now, and pose a question to you. In this report, you cited a couple of very key things I'd like to talk about here. We have three questions relative to them. Number one is what I call the Trump dilemma, publicly supporting a morally imperfect candidate. Second, the mind-boggling lack of leadership and a startling bold example of poor citizenship, really on behalf of pastors, because so many of them are saying they're not going to be involved. And then the fact that there are theologically liberal pastors seem to be far more engaged in the electoral process. These are big issues. I want to go here first with you. We've always had, George, morally imperfect candidates. They've run the range from theological to business ethics to anti-America positions, supporting globalism, a whole host of things that we've had reasons not to be engaged as Christians in the election. And a lot of these are surfacing for many people relative to Trump. And I want to ask you this and ask you to bear and bring this research to bear. You know, what is it regarding him? Is it his personality, his positions? Or what is it, and how must we look at this? Why is there such disengagement as from what your research is supporting is the case here?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, what we found from a prior survey that we did is that the concerns that conservative Christians and theologically conservative pastors have relate to character. They're looking for somebody who has godly character. And so when they look at Mr. Trump, they look at three marriages, they look at how he talks about people, how he interacts with people, and they say, you know what, that's not what we would permit of our children. How do we want to put this person in the primary position of leadership in our country? They're concerned about that. They're concerned about some of the switches that he's made on moral issues such as abortion, where we know that previously he had been pro-abortion. Now he says that he's anti-abortion. So they're wondering, well, which is it? Is this just a switch of convenience? He previously was not a Republican. Now he is a Republican. They feel like they don't really know who the real Donald Trump is. And so, again, going back to the thinking of pastors, they know that some people in their congregation rely upon the pastor for guidance, and they don't want to mislead their people into following somebody that they are not even comfortable with, because eventually if that person gets elected and then demonstrates bad character in terms of personal behavior, in terms of choices on behalf of the country, then congregants may point the finger back at the pastor and say, wait a minute, you said this person was reliable, they were, you know, a person that we should stand behind. They're not godly at all. So I think that's where a lot of the discomfort is coming from. But the thing they've got to understand is, look, we've got a choice to make. You don't have to like all of these candidates, but you do have to choose the best one to do the job. And so none of them are going to be perfect. None of us are perfect. I mean, let's get over ourselves here. And the reality is you've got to look at who's saying what. You've got to use the intuition and instinct that God gives to you to have discernment about who's going to serve us better. You know, as a lot of people have said, we are not electing a pastor-in-chief. We're selecting, you know, the chief executive for the country. It's a whole different thing. And so maybe the criteria that are being used by pastors aren't exactly the best ones to fit the need of the moment.
You know, well, George, it's interesting to know that my thinking, and this isn't necessarily a question, but it's just an observation, and that is I really wonder how many pastors in the pulpit today really do sense a strong calling from God to preach the whole counsel of God. You know, I've been wondering that, and of course my question about that is becoming more and more prevalent as I see some of these reports and results and findings that you're bringing up. But to get to a specific question, you know, the matter of leadership in the pulpit, as you cited, is a matter of grave concern. And I'm just wondering, George, if you wouldn't mind to expand a little bit upon your view of leadership and citizenship. You know, here at the American Pastors Network, along with you, we believe that the two of those go together. But why does it appear that there is such a disconnect now among conservative pastors in America?
Yeah, it's a big question, Gary. You know, I guess the way that I would approach that is by saying, look, what a leader helps people to do is to make sense of reality so that they can make the best possible choices for the future. And when we look at pastors, they're doing almost exactly the opposite. They're saying, look, I can't take the risk. Well, if you're a leader, your entire job is about taking risks.
Amen.
They're saying, yes. I don't want to take the risk. And you know, I think it's better for people to do this research on their own to figure out what the Bible says about the issues and what the candidates say about the issues and how to make a choice of leaders rather than me get involved. Well, if that's the case, in my mind, you've just extricated yourself from leadership. Mm. You are abandoning the role of a leader. And what you're saying is, you know what, I'm going to let you flounder about in the marketplace, just being tossed to and fro by the winds of public opinion and the bias of the media, rather than giving you the truth of God. I think it's okay for you not to have that. Yes, I know it's my job to provide that to you, but I'm not going to do it in this case because it's uncomfortable for me. Well, then, my friend, you're not a leader. You have a job to help people make sense of reality. And the best way to understand reality is to go back to what we know to be absolute truth. That's the only anchor that we've got.
Amen.
In this life. And so we've got to go back to that.
George, that is an incredible statement you just made, and I hope we can get that transcribed and get that out. That was outstanding. I want to ask you a question because I'm just curious. Years back in the 80s into the 90s, we had two national leaders by the name of Jerry Falwell and D. James Kennedy, and what people think of them and what their opinions are of them really is not my point. The point is they were leaders. They were fearless. They were courageous. Have you done any research or just in your own thinking factored in the absence of those two men and their aggressive leadership and maybe how that is factored into the unwillingness on the part of conservative Bible-believing pastors to step up to the plate and lead?
Well, yeah, and I think it's not only those two men. We've had other people in the past as well, but I think what we're engaged in right now is that the Christian church is clearly confused about how it's supposed to behave in a contentious time. And so there's so much concern about, gee, we don't want to offend people. Hello? I mean, Jesus offended people by simply speaking truth. And so if he is our role model, we've got to say, you know what? We do it in love. We do it because we want the best for people, but we can't shrink back from the truth. We will be held accountable just as they will. Why would we not want to help them be prepared to make the best possible choices so that they too, hopefully like we can, stand before a holy and righteous God someday and hear him say, well done, good and faithful servant. Right now, what we have are a number of people who are in positions of leadership who are refusing to demonstrate and provide leadership. And so I think one of the most important things for the church in the days to come is for us to weed out individuals who are not willing to lead. Let's figure out what their gift is. I mean, I know from our research that currently only about one out of every five senior pastors in America believes that they've actually been called and gifted to lead. So that means that three out of four senior pastors in America do not even believe that they've been called by God and gifted by God to lead. When we ask them, well, what are you doing there? They say, well, I've been called and gifted to, you know, preach or counsel or whatever it is that they feel. You know, but well, then great. Let's put you in a place where you can do what God has called and gifted you to do. But let's not ask you to be who God himself hasn't called you to be.
That's an excellent answer, George. As a pastor for 40-some years, and I don't, 42 years, I guess it is, I appreciate that answer, and that means a lot. And, of course, I agree with you. I think we're seeing that all over the country, George. Thanks for that particular answer, Sam.
And George, we've got just about a minute left here. Let me just ask you a very straight-up question here right now. There are some people who say, you know what, I just can't bring myself to vote for Trump. He may be the candidate, but I'd rather go out and vote for somebody else, write somebody's name in. I cannot vote for that man. What do you say to somebody like that?
I'd say, please use your brain. Please be strategic.
Wow.
When you look at what the outcome of the election is going to be, it's between two candidates. There will be, and there always have been, other candidates on the ballot as well. They're not going to win. you give your vote to one of those other candidates, the third party, minor candidates. You know, I mean, yeah, you're making a statement, good for you. Here's the ultimate statement. One of the two major candidates is going to be our next president for 4 years. They're going to appoint 3 to 5 Supreme Court justices. They're going to determine whether or not we have a third term of Obama or not. You've got to think. You've got to be smart. You've got to be wise in how you use the privilege that you have of voting. Good citizenship is about being informed and being involved. Be a good citizen.
As we conclude today, we want to thank you for joining us for Stand in the Gap Weekend. We hope this program, made up of the best segments from our daily program, has been a blessing to you, and we hope that you'll let your friends and neighbors know about how they can listen too. Friends, when God led us to start the American Pastors Network 3 years ago, we knew that unless the pastors of America stepped up, preached the whole counsel of God, and stood against the forces of evil, that America would decline, become morally weaker, and would become an embarrassment to the nations. And while we are greatly concerned about how many pulpits remain silent, we are encouraged at how many pastors are stepping up and uniting with thousands of others already part of the American Pastors Network. But these are urgent and perilous days, and we need your immediate help. We humbly ask you to support us in 3 important ways. First, we need intercessory prayer warriors to support APN. If God's called you to the ministry of prayer, would you pray not only for our nation, but specifically for our pastors and then also for us? The second way you can help is to consider sending as large a financial gift as possible this week in support of our efforts to establish state chapters of the American Pastors Network. So far, God has supplied the funds and the leaders to allow us to start 5 state networks. But our goal is to start 45 more. Would you consider sending as large a gift as possible this week for this worthy cause? You know, it takes about $5,000 to establish each new state association. And regardless of the amount of your gift, it will help to move ahead what we believe to be God's biblical plan for national restoration. Your gift is also tax deductible. And you can donate online by visiting our website and clicking the donate button on our website. And I pray that God will move in your heart to help today. There's simply no more important place we believe that help and prayer is needed today than to light a fire of revival under our pulpits in every state of the Union. And finally, the American Pastors Network just launched a national initiative called We Will Stand. It's a simple but powerful idea which invites America's pastors, church leaders, and believers generally to intentionally band together and faithfully stand for biblical truth in the public square and let their congregations and communities know that they too can be involved. At perhaps no other time in history has it been more important for our nation's pastors and churches to work diligently to cultivate real change in our society. By visiting our website and adding your name to this initiative, pastors, church leaders, and believers nationwide can join with thousands of other courageous and faithful ambassadors of Christ by committing to preach, pray, encourage, and engage. To find out more about this initiative, please visit our website at standinthegapradio.com and click on the banner in the top right-hand corner that says, Sign the We Will Stand Pledge. Now, if you'd prefer to write to us instead, please address your card or letter to Stand in the Gap, 83 West Main Street, Suite 3, Elverson, Pennsylvania, 19520. This is Sam Rohr asking you the very important question. Will you stand in the gap for truth with us this coming week?
Thank you for listening to Stand in the Gap Weekend, the American Pastors Network Week in Review. Our goal is to equip the pastor, church leader, and all believers to think critically and biblically in a culture that increasingly rejects truth, and to provide you with a focused analysis of current events viewed through the lens of a biblical and constitutional worldview. APN promotes the return of our nation to God through preaching, praying, and equipping Christians to reclaim the culture as soldiers and ambassadors of Christ. God hears the calls of His people who learn the truth and obey it. To partner with APN, please visit us on the web at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. You can sign up to receive regular updates, to become a prayer partner, or to help as a financial partner. You may also call us at 610-901-3607. Again, that's 610-901-3607. To listen to any of our Stand in the Gap programs, including our live daily program, go to standinthegapradio.com. That's standinthegapradio.com. Thank you for listening today, and be sure to tune in next week at the same time for Stand in the Gap Weekend, the American Pastors Network. Pastors preaching the truth, equipping their people to impact the culture for Christ.